Hello, tech fans, and welcome into the Tech Sideline podcast. I'm your host, Will Stewart, the founder and general manager of Tech Sideline. Our regular host, Evan Hughes, is still on Christmas break.
I saw him on Saturday, though.
He was doing wrestling, right?
Yeah. Saw him in Castle before the game.
Which went very well.
Before the match, yeah.
Tech beat WVU 36-3.
So what they call it, the...
I can't remember what they called it.
The Black Diamond Brawl.
Something like that. Yeah,
wasn't much of a brawl, was it?
So this is, Evan should be back. I think he's going to be back Saturday for the Syracuse basketball game. And then he'll be back for a podcast recording starting next Monday. So this is episode 108 of the TSL podcast. And we're recording on the morning of Monday, January 13th, 2020. Everybody wish Malcolm a happy birthday. He had his birthday on Saturday, last Saturday, January 11th, and turned 21. And I had I will call it a privilege, the pleasure of going out and having a legal beer with my son.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. Today we're going to talk about Dalton Keene's decision to turn pro, the transfer of Raheem, Blackshear Raheem, right? Not Raheem.
Raheem,
Chris,
I believe.
Raheem, Chris says, from Rutgers to Virginia Tech. And, of course, Virginia Tech basketball. The Hokies had a couple of, I would call one of them a big win at Syracuse last week, and the home win over NC State was a good win. So 2-0 last week. Now, whether you're watching live on Facebook or listening or watching archived on SoundCloud, Facebook, or YouTube, or anywhere else you access the TSL podcast, because there's all kinds of ways you can get to us, we're pleased to have you join us. As usual, I've got with me today on set managing editor Chris Coleman, and behind the scenes, we've got producer Malcolm Stewart. Malcolm's put together a new view today. Since you and I are across from each other, he's got this little view he's going to do.
I saw that where we're right next to each other.
Yeah, he chops it up, and we'll be facing right next to each other. So he's experimenting around with things a little bit. As always, the TSL podcast is sponsored by the Fisher Law Firm. The Fisher Law Firm is Virginia's trusted DUI and traffic defense firm dedicated to defending individuals charged with traffic-related offenses. From their office in Blacksburg, they're able to serve the entire Commonwealth of Virginia. And we can vouch for that. Jonathan was on the show the other day, and he is a road warrior. He will travel anywhere. Whether you're charged with driving under the influence or speeding, the Fisher Law Firm realizes that each case is important to the client. To date, the firm has defended more than 30,000 people charged with moving violations. For a free consultation, call anytime, day or evening, toll free at 1-800-680-7031 or email info@fisherlegal.com. And we had Jonathan on the last episode of the TSL podcast, episode 107. So look it up. It was really fun.
Flowed really well.
I was nervous about having a sponsor on because I know Jonathan, but you never know how people are going to do when you stick a mic in their face, you know, and you turn on all these lights and you get the guy over there with the cameras and stuff. But we had a lot of fun. We were just talking about all kinds of stuff, some road trips he'd been on to Virginia Tech football. And it was also interesting to talk to him about his practice. And I got a couple of really nice emails. I'll just flat say it. One person emailed me and said it was really nice to learn how the professionalism with which he approaches his practice, and that he's not just an ambulance chaser.
Right.
So I agree with that. It's always interesting to me to talk to people about their careers and their businesses, because I'm very business oriented. You know, how can we make this work? How can we keep this going? So the thought processes that people go through are interesting. So thank Jonathan for being on. He's the kind of guy, I think we could have him on some more, you know, and he emailed me over the weekend and expressed an interest in writing some stuff for the site. So, you know, from a sponsorship standpoint, that's gold, right?
That's gold, right. Anytime we can talk about 1990s era football, I'm down. I swear I remember some of that stuff better than I do what happened 6 weeks
since
ago,
then,
right?
Yeah. And so I also traded emails with Chris Colston, who used to be the Hokie Huddler editor, and has written several books on Virginia Tech football, and we got to have Colston on here. Jonathan said, he said something like in his email, he said something to me about, I'm a good writer, good at composition, all that sort of stuff. And he was a history major just like you. And that's one of the things about when we hired you to work on Tech Sideline, you already knew how to write. You already knew how to put long form pieces.
That's the thing
together.
About being a history major, that it taught me how to write. I know I've learned more about history on my own easily than I did by going to school, but learning how to write is a whole different thing.
Yeah, you had to write a whole lot of papers and stuff like that. So anyway, we'll move on from that. First, let's do a couple fun things. A little TSL podcast trivia. Did you know that I have shoes that I only wear on the TSL podcast?
I did know that.
Yeah, and this is one pair. When you do one or two shows a week, you quickly run out of things to wear and shoes to wear. And
right.
I got a buddy, my buddy Jeff McMillian, and Jeff's always commenting on the shoes I'm wearing. So I went out and I bought some podcast only shoes just for Jeff.
You know, Tech does have a fashion department. Maybe we need an intern to dress us basically for the podcast.
Well, so I was sitting here thinking one of the sponsors of Tech Sideline is Campus Emporium, and we're always doing featured items for Campus Emporium. What is wrong with me? Why am I not going down to their shop and saying, hey, give me the gear, I'll wear it on the show and promote it on the show? Now they got to pay extra for that because Jonathan pays extra for being on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I just, you know, as much as I sit around and think about this business all the time, every once in a while I have these little epiphanies.
That was right in front of your face.
Yeah, like that's low-hanging fruit provided Campus Emporium has the extra budget. Man, that would be cool because we've got this visual medium now. Mm-hmm. You know, we could put, and if the featured item was not an article of clothing, whatever it is, we can put it on the desk in front of us. Like we did with the, remember when we had the little black lunch pail helmet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which Malcolm, there it is. It's right up there. I don't think, excuse me, elbowing the mic. So these are not at Campus Emporium anymore, by the way. As you can imagine, they sold out quickly. And we were so hoping they'd wear this for the bowl game.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably a good thing they didn't.
Every time I think about wearing sponsorships, I think of that scene from Wayne's World when they're doing the advertising and Garth is wearing all the Adidas stuff. And he's like, it's like people only do things because they get paid.
Because they get paid and he's eating Domino's pizza and holding the box up and drinking a Coke. Oh, man. Some people just got some free advertising.
Yep.
All right. So we'll start with Dalton Keene. Dalton Keene, true junior, just finished his true junior year.
Yep.
Tight end. Announced that he is turning pro. And there are some facets to this, which we'll get into. But let me read Dalton's announcement. And you know, in this day and age where you're covering stuff so much, here we go, we're going to start parsing words, we're going to drill right down into the essence of everything. So here's his announcement. After a lot of consideration over the past couple of weeks, I've decided to forego my senior year of eligibility and declare for the NFL draft. This was a very difficult decision, and it is with a heavy heart that I leave my teammates and coaches. And fans, Dalton, fans, you're leaving the fans too. I want to thank everyone that has helped me get to this point, including, notice the order, Coach Fuente, Coach Shebest, and Coach Wiles. But most importantly, my family and teammates who I could rely on, and fans. So, and I added that. Something special is building in Blacksburg, and I wish I could be part of it, but this is the best decision for me at this time. Lastly, thank you, Hokie Nation. There you go. For all the love and support you've shown me over the last couple of years. And indeed, he's been one of the more popular players.
No doubt.
With the hair and the
Rambo.
He had a mustache for a while, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, no doubt. You know, he's just been a really cool guy too, that Tech fans have glommed onto or attached themselves to. They really like him. So this announcement, I would call this unexpected.
Well, we said there was going to be unexpected attrition.
Yeah.
Right? Because there always is. Yeah, I didn't Dalton think the unexpected attrition would be Dalton Keene, though.
Dalton Keene, I know. So let's pick this apart. Immediately there was speculation that this was related to the letting Charlie Wiles go, not renewing Charlie Wiles' contract.
Right.
So for those who don't know the connection, go ahead and...
Dalton Keene's father and Charlie Wiles were college roommates at Murray State.
Yeah.
Under Frank Beamer.
When Frank was head coach?
I guess head coach. Probably. And Bud was in there somewhere, whether he was coaching or playing at that point. I guess he was coaching.
I think he was coaching. I think Charlie is.
Somebody even told me that Wiles is Dalton's godfather.
Right.
So that's a very, very close relationship.
And that's how they got Dalton Keene out of Colorado.
That connection.
Come all the way over to Blacksburg. Trust me, if you look at the history of Virginia Tech football recruiting, there's not a lot of players from Colorado.
From Colorado.
Yeah. So people immediately started speculating that the Keen family is angry that Charlie got let go. And you and I even heard that they were ticked that Charlie had been let go.
Yes.
But, I mean, you got to sit and think about this. This is a major decision for this player. Yes, I'm sure the Keen family is disappointed that Charlie's contract wasn't renewed. But you don't make life-changing decisions, do you, based on that kind of thing?
You know, it took him a couple of weeks to make the decision, and I don't think you make a rash decision is something you decide to do spur of the moment.
Yeah.
Right? He had several weeks to think about it, and obviously he did think about it. I do. It wouldn't shock me if the Wilds news pushed him into exploring the possibility.
Started the thought process.
Exactly. When I got the text messages last Wednesday night, it was from somebody and said, "Have you heard anything about Dalton Keen?" Said no.
You're like, what? Did he get in trouble?
Right. Yeah.
Did you check their arrest records?
Right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to insult you, Dalton.
So he said, no. Here's the deal. Basically, that him and his dad are mad about the Wilds situation. So he's thinking about declaring for the NFL draft.
Yeah.
And that's what I was told before the declaration happened. Now he came out on Twitter in a later statement that was
I've
a
got
response.
That. Let me read okay. that. Yeah. So somebody said, oh, I bet this has something to do with Charlie Wilds being let go. And Dalton responded, not the case at all. Of course I was disappointed about Coach Wilds. That had nothing to do with my decision. I'm just doing what I think is best for me as a player. I have nothing but love for Coach Fuente and the rest of the coaching staff.
Right. So he handled that properly.
Yeah.
That's what you say, whether it's true or not. But I'll take him at his word.
Yeah.
I think
we have no reason not to.
Yeah. When it comes down to it, I think Keen is going to be in that 5 to 7 round range.
Yeah.
And I probably don't think that was going to change over the course of another year.
Yeah.
And I think these days guys are the way guys view it these days is, you know, there's just so many injuries in football these days that if you can't improve your stock, you better go ahead and do it while you can before you get hurt. I was watching the Seahawks-Packers game yesterday, and the Seahawks' top three running backs were all in the injured reserve.
That's a brutal position.
I don't know why the NFL has not expanded their rosters.
Right.
Because, I mean, with so many guys hurt these days, they really need to have, you know, 60 men on rosters.
It's funny that the NFLPA has not, in the past 5 or 10 years, really ramped up the negotiation on that part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to negotiate that. You can't just go to the owners and say, you know, we want 65 players instead of 54 or whatever it is. That costs money.
Yeah. You know, so they had to go out and sign Marshawn Lynch off the scrap heap, off the couch.
Wow.
You know, he hadn't played football in 14 months, and they signed him like 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Wow.
Because all their running backs are hurt.
So this reminds me of the discussion when Isaiah Ford decided to go pro early. Mm-hmm. He probably wasn't projected particularly high. Then he went to the combine, and he's not an elite athlete. Yeah. But the discussion was, it's not like Isaiah Ford's going to get any better with another year.
Correct. Some guys, if they're really good athletes but not particularly good football players yet, they could help themselves out.
Bucky
could have helped himself out if he had come back and developed some more football skills.
Yeah.
He chose not to do that. But yeah, if you're one of those guys who your athleticism, you know, is mediocre, but you're already a really, really, really good football player, you're probably not going to help your stock all that much because 3 years out of high school, how much is your athleticism really going to improve? None, really. You are at that point.
Yeah, if you look at Dalton Keen, he's really not going to become a better football player. He's already a really good blocker, you know. A good open field blocker. You know, I think he is what he is at this point. So it'd be interesting to talk to him about all the details of what went in the decision.
Yeah, for sure. I think the official feedback you get from the NFL is one of three grades. First round, second round, or you should go back. That's how the NFL views it.
Yeah.
But players don't necessarily view it that way for the reasons I just mentioned.
Yeah. All right. So he has – this is interesting. I went and looked up his stats from last year. I looked up all the receiving stats from last year because if you just like look at Dalton's career statistics and compare him to James Mitchell and Drake Dulius and Nick Gallo. Excuse me if I say error.
Yeah.
You know, Drake and Nick don't have any catches, and Mitchell's got, you know, 20 some, I think. And but if you look at this past year, Trey Turner 34 catches, Hazleton and Tavion Robinson at 31 each. James Mitchell and Dalton Keene each had 21 catches. Mm-hmm. They were very different in nature. Mitchell averaged 17.2 yards a catch, and Dalton averaged 11.4. Mitchell had two touchdowns, and Dalton had five. So, now Dalton was invisible until they made the change at quarterback this year. And he caught three touchdowns in one game, right?
Against Miami, right?
Probably, yeah. I think that rings a bell. Parts of that season I've buried already, but you know, so I don't know that it's some of the talk I saw said that, oh, he sees those young guys coming up and he sees the changes in the offense. I don't think he was worried about diminished production.
None of that at all. No, Keane was going to play a huge role.
Yeah,
I mean, he and Mitchell, yeah, they're both listed as a tight end, but It's old school thinking to believe that they're both traditional tight ends that do the exact same thing. Yeah, they're both very different players that are asked to do different things. They line up differently. Mitchell is I'm not going to go so far and say he's a wide receiver. He's Bucky Hodges. He always lines up on the outside. That's because that's not true. But he's more wide receiver-ish than Dalton Keene is, whereas Keene is he's somewhere between a tight end and the H-back role that Sam Rogers used to play. I think Keene technically is their H-back. They just use the H-back a little bit differently than they did when Rogers was in Blacksburg. So you're talking about two different positions. So it's hard. Who will play the H-back role for Virginia Tech next year? I don't know.
Yeah, and, you know, I was going to say the 2020 recruiting class isn't fully signed, but I'm not sure that you can grab a guy in recruiting right now that you're going to play a significant role.
No, they grabbed the guy from France.
Yeah, so let's get into that. So who does Virginia Tech have left on the roster at tight end? They got James Mitchell. Mm-hmm. They've got Drake Dulius, mm-hmm. who
hasn't played. He's had a lot of injury problems, but and there was always talk of him entering the portal because he's stuck behind three guys. Well, he's not behind three guys anymore.
Yeah, here's your chance. So I think the spring coming up is big for him.
It is.
And you've got Nick Gallo coming up. And you probably see Nick as more of a – well, I don't know if you see him as an H-back type, more traditional
tight end. I think he's a traditional tight end.
Blocking.
I think he can put his hand in the ground and block, and I think he can be a good receiver too.
Yeah.
You haven't necessarily seen it yet because he was the third tight end this year, and I think they threw the ball through it his way – or they tried to throw it to him against UVA.
I remember that.
UVA had it all covered up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think he's going to be a good player for Tech. I just don't know exactly what role he's going to play. Yeah. I don't know if the offense will look different without Dalton Keene.
It really will. Sure. But at least it's not something like an injury situation that happens right before you start playing
the
season.
You've got the entire offseason to prepare for it. You got all of spring to experiment on some things, figure out what's best for you. Yeah.
And they've got a fourth scholarship tight end. It'll be, I believe it's pronounced Wilfred Penay.
Mm-hmm.
Who signed in December out of France. I think we see him as more of a developmental guy.
Yeah.
But, you know.
You know, he was a definite redshirt with Dalton Keene here. He's a guy I would still definitely prefer to redshirt. I think he's got good ability. I think he's a good athleticism.
Yeah.
I just think it's one of those things where he came over from France and he's been at a small prep school up in Connecticut and just not a lot of people know about him. I mean, I don't know about you, but I haven't done much research on French tight ends recently, right?
No, it's not on my daily reading list.
It's not on my daily reading list. So, yeah, I think he flew under the radar. I think he's a good prospect, but I don't want to ask him to play as a true freshman.
Yeah,
so that's where it hurts in my – well, it hurts in a lot of ways, but
You lose leadership.
Yeah. So. And yeah, Dalton in a lot of ways was somewhat the face of the program as far as how he approached off seasons. I mean, he embodied the hard, smart.
He's probably on the leadership council. I don't remember the list of players, but he's got to be one of them.
He's a weight room warrior.
Yeah.
He sets the tone in that room.
Yeah.
So it's difficult from that standpoint to lose him. Now, that being said, You know, I can't say I blame him just for the reasons we talked about earlier with how football players get hurt these days, how many of them get hurt, particularly at the NFL level.
Yeah.
You just don't have that many opportunities. And even if he's on a practice squad for a year, these days practice squad players, they can make over $100,000.
Yeah.
If football doesn't work out, he's going to have enough money to come back and get his degree.
Yeah. So hopefully all of his calculations are correct and things work out for him, and we wish him luck in the NFL.
Yeah. The other way to think about it is, I guess he's got a tremendous amount of confidence in his abilities. If I wasn't that way, I would probably stay in college for a year, because think about it. I mean, it's not a sure thing that Dalton Keene sticks in the NFL.
That's
and
right.
makes it. He might have played his last competitive football game of his career now.
Yeah.
Like, even if he sticks around on a practice squad for a couple of years, practice squad players don't play.
Yeah.
They just practice.
Yeah.
So it's possible that he just played his last competitive football game.
Well, at least he made a great catch, right?
He sure did with his bicep.
All right. So here's how it works. You got 21 and 22 starters coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Then DeSean McClee says, no, I'm done.
Yeah.
Then Dalton Keene says, I'm going pro. And you're already down to 19 right. out of 22.
Right.
You know, and
I said originally it would be 18 or 19.
Yeah, well, yeah. So you're
so
already on the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so next topic, let's see. I wanted to talk about the transfer of Raheem Blackshear from Rutgers into yep. Virginia Tech. So you're gonna have to take the lead on this one. So let me read a little bit first to kind of set the table. And you were the one who watched the film and wrote the article. So you did watch this film, correct?
Yeah, I put it in our news and notes.
Right. So he's 5'9", 192. He redshirted last year after appearing
– Last year of 2019 season.
Last year in 2019, appeared in just four games for Rutgers. As a sophomore in 2018, honorable mention All-Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty impressive. Ran for 586 yards on 143 carries with three touchdowns. And he also caught – I believe these are career numbers, right? Yeah.
No, he's –
This was his sophomore year.
Yeah.
143 carries, 586 yards, and three touchdowns.
Yep.
44 catches, 367 yards, and two touchdowns, lined up at both tailback and wide receiver.
Yep.
All right. And through the first four games of 2019, he was catching it more than he was carrying it. He had 29 carries for 88 yards, but he caught 29 for 310 yards.
Four games.
Yeah.
And had a 100-yard game against BC. So all these transfer running backs Tech is bringing in, they yeah. had big games against BC last year.
So seven catches, 55 yards against Michigan, and nine catches, 130 yards against Boston College.
Mm-hmm.
And so for his career, 211 carries for 912 yards. That's 4.5 yards a carry. 80 receptions for 810 yards, so kind of a possession guy, for a total of 12 touchdowns. He also has experience as a kickoff returner. So, again, 5'9", 192. What'd you see on film, and where do you see this going?
I think Tech needs another slot receiver.
Yeah.
Because right now, Tavion Robinson's the only guy. As little as Hezekiah Grimsley was playing at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And with so many rumors going around throughout the year about him wanting to get back close to his mom,
yeah.
and he just wasn't playing this year. So the way I see it, Tech doesn't have another slot receiver, and now they do.
Yeah.
He's a guy you can line him up anywhere, basically. I see him in a jet sweep slot receiver role at Tech. That doesn't mean he won't line up in the backfield and get carries. That's the thing. You know, you can break the formation, and your personnel can be different. I mean, he's a guy who can line up in the slot. He's a guy who can line up at tailback, and opposing defensive coordinators, maybe they don't know whether they should go with their nickel package or their traditional three, or the more traditional three linebacker package or something
right.
like that. So football coaches love guys like him because it helps that offensive coordinator manipulate things, because you don't know where he's going to line up. You don't know exactly how to approach things as a defensive coordinator. So that's the role I see him playing. I do think he will spend most of his time in the slot for Tech, but, I mean, I could be wrong. We'll have to see what happens with all the other running backs. That's going to be a lot of new faces in that running
yeah,
back room
yeah.
this year. But he's a guy who, I don't, you don't necessarily want to look at stats too much because you remember you have Rutgers quarterbacks throwing him the ball and Rutgers players blocking for him.
Oh, so the film I watched on him, it seemed like they were losing by 3 touchdowns.
Oh, yeah.
Every bit of film I looked at.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So you don't want to judge him too much on that. I mean, I know Ryan Willis did not have the senior season he wanted to have and the people expected him to have, but his junior season, you wouldn't have thought that he was the guy that threw more interceptions and touchdowns at Kansas, right?
Yeah.
He was pretty good as a junior at Tech. So you can't don't say, oh, he played for Rutgers and he put up these numbers. I think he's a guy, I can certainly see that he's a fit. And obviously Jafar Williams was at Rutgers in 2017 as a wide receivers coach. So he probably coached him a little bit. I expect he was getting coached by not only the running backs coach, but also the wide receivers coach.
And he's probably got his cell phone number in his cell phone.
Absolutely. You know, well, so. Jerry Kill was the offensive coordinator at Rutgers that year. So there's a lot of familiarity for Virginia Tech staff on this.
Yeah, and that's a point I forgot to make. They know what they're getting.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They've told Justin Fuente what they're getting.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a chance to research this, but somebody said that in, let's see, what was the career numbers? 211 carries, 80 receptions. That's 291 touches. And somebody on the message board said they looked it up. Zero fumbles.
Wow.
291. Now, what I saw on film was I saw a guy who knows when contact is coming. He covers up. He really covers that football up.
I saw a couple times where he was about to get tackled from behind, and it was like he just knew the guy was right behind him, and he just got the ball high and tight real quick.
Yeah. And he is physical going into contact. Mm-hmm. He doesn't wilt when contact comes.
Right.
And some players do that. When they know they're about to be tackled, they lose their forward momentum. They're those guys that fall forward for extra yards and really make you tackle them. And I think he's one of those guys. I don't see elite speed, but if he had elite speed, he'd probably be playing somewhere other than Rutgers.
Yeah, no doubt.
But I did see a guy with, at his size, very shifty. Mm-hmm. At 192 pounds, he's physical. For a short guy. So I think it's a good pickup.
I think so. Pretty good player, I think. And a good scheme fit for how we would use somebody like him, in my opinion. So, yeah, I'm a fan of that one. Just on paper, the headlines read, Virginia Tech adds Rutgers transfer running back.
Woohoo!
That's kind of... Well, it's look, another running back,
right.
And from Rutgers. But that's why I think I might have headlined ours: Virginia Tech adds wide receiver / running back, or running back / receiver, or something like that.
Let me see what we got. I will look.
I think I at least phrased it that way in the very first sentence. But this guy's so much more than a running back. I think it's one of those things that if you're a fan and you just read the headline, you're like, what? But if you actually read the article and watch his film and see how he's used, then you start to understand.
Yeah. So your headline was Raheem Blackshear announces transfer to Virginia Tech, mm-hmm. and the excerpt was Virginia Tech has added transfer running back / wide receiver.
Yeah.
Now, what we don't know is what his eligibility status is for next year.
We don't. He did redshirt this past year as a true junior.
So he would be a redshirt junior at Tech this coming year.
He's assuming he fills out the right paper, he's going to get immediate eligibility because coaching change.
Yeah. So hopefully this one will work out for Virginia Tech.
Yeah, hope so.
All right, so let's talk. This was a last minute note that I added in as I was prepping. Let's give a little bit of airtime to the Virginia Tech cornerback coaching hire.
Yes,
there are rumors making the rounds that they have their guy mm-hmm. finally mm-hmm. after two or three misses, probably three misses. Now
I only know for a fact they offered it to one person.
Like, I think a Green Bay...
A Green Bay assistant.
Yeah.
Whose name I forget.
The rest is kind of a little bit fuzzier. And for those wondering about Pearson Prelo, I think the way it played out with Pearson Prelo is that he was considered for it, and he and Fuente talked about it. And what is being said is that Pearson did not want to... didn't want to be a full-on position coach because of the recruiting that requires.
Yeah.
And the time on the road, and his son PJ, I think PJ has one more year at Radford High School, mm. and I think they have other younger kids. Mm. This is a guy who played, 12 years in the NFL?
Yeah.
he doesn't need the pay raise from whatever he's not. Doing now to full-on assistant. And and I totally get that.
I wouldn't want to do it if I had enough money and I didn't have to do it. There's no way I'd get out there and recruit.
Yeah, you know, so I know where Pearson lives. He lives on the outskirts of Radford. I don't know if it's in the Radford city limits or technically in Pulaski or Montgomery County, but he's close to work. Doesn't take him long to get to work. It's a great job. He doesn't have to recruit, you know. So he may have been interested in it at first, but then thought to himself, you know what, I'll pass.
Yeah, I think that was probably mutual. The way I can figure things is that Justin Fuente wants to get better at in-state recruiting.
Yeah.
The guy he offered the job to from the Packers is like a former William & Mary assistant, played in the state of Virginia, grew up in Richmond, just tons of Virginia ties in recruiting, and who it looks like they're going to hire, Ryan Smith, who's a safeties coach at JMU right now, kind of the same deal. Played at Richmond, from Virginia, has coached FCS ball in the state of Virginia. Lots of in-state ties.
Yeah.
I'm sure they talked to Lauren Johnson about it, at least talked to him about it, and that's obviously an in-state guy. So it just seems to me like of all of those four guys, Prelo doesn't really fit because he's not an in-state guy.
Yeah. So from South Carolina.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I think – and it's not like he's lived in Virginia all that long, right? He played in the NFL for 12 or 13 years and has lived in Virginia – ever since he retired, what was that, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. And he's lived in Southwest Virginia, not like Richmond or Northern Virginia or the 757. So he doesn't really make sense from that standpoint, because all the interest in the other defensive backs coach indicates that Fuente wanted this hire to improve in-state recruiting.
I think that's the goal of almost all of the hires. Yeah.
He and Tapp.
Tapp.
I think he identified two different things. I think he wanted to get better at defensive line recruiting, and he wanted to get better at in-state recruiting when he went into this process. And everything else took a backseat to that.
Well, and he also wanted, and this is the hiring of Tracy Clays, he also wanted a really experienced defensive coach to help mentor Justin Hamilton. I'm not sure how much mentoring of Hamilton Bud Foster is going to do.
I don't think he's going to do much. Now that we know how the staff looks, the entire defense staff is going to look, or most of it at least. You know, he's going to be there if Hamilton wants to. I mean, he's a phone call away.
He's not going to be sitting in on meetings.
He doesn't need to. Yeah. I mean, you've got a longtime defensive coordinator in there in Clays. You've got an NFL defensive line coach.
Yeah.
You don't want too many chefs in there. We don't even know what the defense is going to look like.
Yeah, and the stuff I'm hearing about Bud, and I'm putting thoughts in Bud's head. I haven't had a chance to talk to Bud myself. I think once Bud made the decision to retire, you know, when you make a decision like that, sometimes you're just like, I'm done. I didn't realize how done I was until I decided to retire, and I'm done. So I don't think he's going to be standing on the sideline or up in the booth or in the meeting rooms. I thought
he would have a fairly heavy role with helping Hamilton game plan on a weekly basis. But now that I've seen how the staff is shaking out, I just don't see that happening.
And what we're hearing, and this comes from a very good source, is that they consider Bud to be a real asset in alumni and fan relations.
He can talk.
And fundraising. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's where they really see Bud as being an asset, no longer in the. So I think we beat that one to death and agree on that. Supposedly they have their guy, which means you might hear about it this week. As a matter of fact, you know, with our luck, we're doing the podcast and they're announcing it right now.
Right. So Tierlink, when the Bills got knocked out, that was on a Sunday game.
Yeah, I don't recall.
And the hire happened 3 days after he got knocked out. That's how long the HR process took, I guess.
Yeah.
JMU lost on Saturday, so assuming the HR process takes 3 days again, they don't work on Sundays at Tech, obviously, so throw that out. So we're probably looking at midweek again, probably Wednesday.
Yeah.
I don't know how the HR process works. Maybe somebody with a better idea can chime in, but it's not going to happen in probably in a day. But I'm thinking Tuesday, Wednesday, something like that.
Yeah, I'm looking at Twitter right now as we're talking. Oh, by the way, a podcast first. I put my feet up on the table.
I was just thinking that. But maybe it'll happen a little quicker because he's already in state. So maybe that's part of
Yeah, that's true. Who knows? True. So we'll see about that. So that should be in the news this week. So let's take a little time out for a sponsored promo for Jonathan Fisher and the Fisher Law Firm, and we'll be right back in a minute.
If you have received a DUI or other traffic-related offense, the road ahead can seem uncertain. Here at Fisher Law Firm, we have a team that is with you every step of the way. We have the experience that comes along with having defended more than 30,000 criminal and traffic cases statewide and the expertise to get the job done. Call anytime, day or evening, for your free consultation or a complimentary copy of my book. Don't forget to ask us about our free appeal guarantee. To learn how we can help solve your problem, check us out at fisherlegal.com. This is Jonathan Fisher, class of 98. Let's go Hokies.
So welcome back to the TSL podcast, and we're going to segue into talking Hokie hoops right now. Malcolm, how many minutes are we into the podcast? 36 sounds about right. So big week for Virginia Tech men's basketball. They go up to Syracuse and they 12 minutes to go. They're down 40-31 and it's just not looking good. And they come back and they win that 67-63. And we'll drill down into that in a second. And then they come home with what I would call a 50-50 game against NC State. The two teams going with identical records. State comes in with a team that is efficient offensively. And, you know, I was worried about that one.
Sure.
And Virginia Tech got down 10-0 early, came back and took the lead. It was neck and neck, and then the Hokies pulled away towards the end with about 5 or 6 minutes left to go. And we'll get into that. But 50,000-foot view, you've got a team that is 12-4 and 3-2 in the ACC. Mm-hmm. I don't want to gush, but I'm pretty happy with where things are right now. Oh,
how could you not be?
Yeah.
I think there were some people, maybe even myself included, that weren't quite sure they'd win 12 all year.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a 9-man rotation that features 6 freshmen.
Yeah.
I mean, and a 6'5 center.
And a total well, the freshman includes Tyrese Radford, you know, who I want to talk about because he was big against NC State. You and I sat here, and when we did the podcast with Evan and we previewed the basketball season, we were pumping the brakes pretty hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, we took some criticism for it afterwards. There's always that element of the fan base that thinks everything's great. Hokies
are going to go. They were picked 14th, right?
Out of 15
teams.
Right,
out of 15 teams.
Yeah. And you and I were kind of managing expectations. And one of the thoughts I'm having, and let me try to phrase this properly, and this is going to sound silly, but I'm really starting to think Mike Young is a heck of a coach.
No, for sure, yeah.
You know, everybody knew he was a good coach, mm-hmm. and he'd built a good program at Wofford. But, and I guess we need more evidence to know for sure, but what I saw this past week was, and I don't understand the game of basketball well enough to be able to point out subtleties, but we do have a guy on our message boards. He goes by GC Hokie 34, who is a past college basketball coach. Mm-hmm. And he went into a very technical description of some stuff he saw against NC State that were new wrinkles offensively. Mm-hmm. That I think, you remember there were two plays where Wabisa Beattie went down baseline and wound up dishing to Tyrese Radford for easy layups. That happened twice. And apparently, if you are a basketball coach, that is a wrinkle you're seeing in how Tech runs a certain formation that was new, and mm-hmm. NC State was not prepared to defend it, just yeah. as an example. When you go up to Syracuse, and Syracuse is one of the, weren't they one of the better three-point shooting teams in the country?
Absolutely. They and NC State are kind of mirror images of each other from an offensive efficiency yeah. standpoint and a defensive efficiency standpoint. Both teams pretty darn good offensively, but not so good defensively.
So let me read off some stats to you. Okay. So I've got a couple of paragraphs here. So this goes into what we were talking about Virginia Tech's defense. So Syracuse shot 12 of 23 in the first half, over 50%, and they led 33-27 at halftime. Then they shot 11 of 30 in the second half. Mm-hmm. NC State was 22 of 69 overall. That combines for the last 99 shots that Virginia Tech's opponents have taken, they've only made 33. Yeah. They're only shooting 33%. From three, Syracuse was 2 of 10 in the second half. NC State was 6 of 30 for the game. So in the last three halves of basketball, Virginia Tech's opponents have shot 33% overall, 8 of 40, 20%. from the 3-point line in the last three halves of basketball. Mm-hmm. At one point, if you go back to the UVA game where Virginia Tech got hammered in Charlottesville, VT, they were 4 of 25 from 3-point range in that entire game. First, at one point against Syracuse, they were 5 of 25. And I tweeted out, that's 9 of their last 50 3-pointers the Hokies have made. After that at Syracuse, they went 5 of 11, and they started out 7 of 13 against NC State. So after making 9 of 50, they made 12 of 24. They went through a stretch where they made 12 of 24. And it looked like a week where they lost at UVA, they were going to lose at Syracuse, and if you're projecting down the road, they might lose to NC State. Instead, they come out of this 2-1.
Mm-hmm. I was disappointed after the UVA game when I read our message boards and our fans were freaking out over one basketball game.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of criticism of the team after that game. And yeah. I'm just like, it's one basketball game.
Yeah.
We're going to play 32 of them.
Say this every year.
I mean, people still do it. I don't understand why people get way up here after a big win and way down here after a loss. Basketball.
So we talk about this all the time, and here's a different way to think about it. When you're watching a football game and the team has a bad quarter, maybe they string together 2 3-and-outs, mm-hmm. and they just look bad. It's just one quarter.
Right.
That is the magnitude of an entire basketball game in a season. Let them have one bad game, particularly when they're so overloaded with freshmen.
Yeah, right. So, like, I thought people, when they beat Michigan State, I thought people overreacted positively. I don't think they realized that how good Dayton and BYU were at that stage relative to Michigan. Did you see what Michigan State lost by like 30 this past week to unranked Purdue? They're good, but they're not elite.
There's
right?
Something's not right there.
So, yeah, for sure.
And it might be right by the end of the year.
Yeah, it probably will be, but it's not now and it hasn't been. But I thought fans reacted too negatively with a UVA loss. I mean, did they not remember that the last year's team also lost by 25 or whatever at UVA? But the disappointing thing about the UVA game to me is that Tech didn't play defense.
Yeah.
UVA is a bad offensive basketball team. Bad.
Yes, they are.
And everybody talked about Tech's 39-point offensive performance. Well, you know, UVA had held Syracuse to 34 and Carolina to 47. I mean, that's still number one in the country in defensive efficiency last time I checked.
Yeah.
What was disappointing was the way the Tech folded down the stretch and just allowed a lot of easy shots around the basket and just checked out.
Yeah.
It was a big step forward against Syracuse and NC State as far as that goes. They got down by double digits in the first half against Syracuse, strung together a couple good possessions. And
yeah, it was 30-19.
Cut it, yeah.
And they closed it to 33-27 at the half. Exactly. And that was a critical stretch.
It was a critical stretch. And then they were down by 9 in the second half, and they weren't making anything. They only scored 2 points the first 7 minutes of the second half.
Yeah, so that 40-31 with about 12 minutes left to go in that game. And then tell me what happened. Tell me the play that happened next. Jalen Cone comes in, mm-hmm. makes a three, gets fouled.
Gets fouled, right. And he did that twice in about 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, it was 40-31. Next thing you know, Tech is up 54-46.
Right.
That is a 23-6 run in the span of 6 minutes.
Right. And it's not necessarily the shooting part. Yes, that was a huge factor, of course. You got to start making some shots at some point. It's a fact that when they faced adversity and looked like they were going to lose, they kept playing hard and kept playing defense. When they got down by double digits against UVA and against BYU and against Dayton, they folded every single time. Yeah. They lost their composure. They didn't stay in the game mentally. And they turned 10, 12-point deficits into 25-point losses.
Yeah.
They stayed in the same thing could have happened against Syracuse. If they had checked out and quit playing hard on defense,
because
Syracuse would have done the same thing to them.
Yeah, it's really hard to score against Syracuse.
Right. Especially when you're 6 freshmen and you've never faced that 2-3 matchup zone before.
Yeah.
The same thing kind of happened against NC State. Obviously, it happened earlier. 10-0, 3 minutes into the game. Not ideal, but, you know, you got 37 minutes left.
And then Nolly throws up this crazy 3-pointer.
So, see, I missed it.
You were out getting food or something.
Well, okay,
like that.
So. Tech didn't order enough food for the media. I get there 45 minutes before tip, and they've already run out of food. Right. And I've been covering this team for 7 years now, and that's never happened before. So they run out of food. So I have to order more food, And they say, okay, we're going to bring it down. We'll have it down in the media room downstairs. So after the first media, or when Mike Young calls that timeout, it's 10-0 NC State. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go downstairs and check and see if the food's here yet. So I go all the way down there. Of course, it's not there. And I get back, and I'm like, you know what? I'm really, really hungry, because I didn't eat that day because I was anticipating eating lunch. So here we are. It's like 2:15, and I'm starving. So I just got concession stand Heathwood Market food. Of course, as soon as I finished that off, the free food arrived.
And, right.
Yeah. But at any rate, so I get back with my food, and it's 13-10 Virginia Tech. So like I watched the 10-0 run, and then I missed the entire 13-0 response run by Virginia Tech.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly,
I don't remember any of that.
That was triggered mostly by Nolly.
Nolly hit 2 3-pointers in a row.
Oh, he just had one of those games where. So I took a friend of mine, friend who lives out in my neighborhood. He's an NC State fan, and I took him to the game. And on the way, I said, number two is Virginia Tech's leading scorer. He's been kind of cold lately, but we'll see what he does. I said, the guy you want to watch is number 23. He's 6'1". Just a phenomenal rebounder. Of course, I'm talking about Tyrese Radford. And so Nolly gets things going. Then it becomes this back and forth affair, nip and tuck, where Virginia Tech at that point held the lead for most of the time. They can't seem to get it beyond 6 or 7 points, you know. So they go into halftime, and I don't remember the halftime score. It was 40-33, I think.
Sounds right.
That's a pretty good half of basketball for Virginia Tech, 40 points.
Well, you consider they were down 10-0.
Yeah, so 40 points in 17 minutes, that'll work.
Yeah.
So then they come out of the half, and NC State is just shooting poorly, and Virginia Tech has a chance.
Both teams are shooting poorly.
Yes, yeah. And Virginia Tech did not take their opportunity, but where it really started to work for Tech was when Tyrese Radford went to work and started getting rebounds and getting buckets, and that got things going.
She was 8 of 11 from the field. I think he's really high in the country in shooting percentage.
Somebody said he's 17th in the country in shooting percentage at 66% or something like that.
Surprise is not higher. It's because he knows who he is. He doesn't take a shot unless it's from right there.
So he was 8 of 11, and I'm sitting there going, which three did he miss? I don't remember him missing three shots.
I think the big guy blocked one.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, another one he had to shoot it over him, which is
then he guy, probably got his own rebound.
Right, that guy averages 3.2 blocks per game, so he's tough to shoot over. Yeah. But sometimes, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before or not, but I've actually started thinking this way recently. Sometimes knowing your own weaknesses and your own limitations can be a strength.
Yeah,
because you know what you're like. Okay, I can't shoot the 3-pointer. I'm not going to hurt my team.
I'm not
going to
do anything
trying crazy. I'm only going to take shots that I can make.
And Beattie's the same way. Beattie passed up a layup to hit Naheem Ali.
Yeah, no kidding.
In the corner.
So I think Radford's the type that understands who he is. And because he understands who he is.
Malcolm's laptop just died. That's why he lost the TSL podcast logo.
I got you. Where was I? Because he knows who he is, he's comfortable in his own skin. That makes him a more effective player.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure. Not everybody is necessarily accepts who they are as players.
Yeah,
you see sometimes guys taking shots that they have no business taking.
Well, I think Nolly forces some things, and that
yeah. But the thing is, he can make them. He can make any of them.
Well, I'm talking about plays in general, not shots.
Oh yeah,
he can make the shots. I got no problem with the shots.
Yeah, yeah. Nolly's still figuring out in his head. Okay, it's 15 seconds left in the shot clock, and I've got an above-average look. Do I take it, or do we try to get a good-to-great look over these last 15 seconds?
But then when it gets hot, he just puts it up.
Yeah, exactly. and sometimes that's good, and sometimes it's not good.
So let's see. Let's see if I do not believe I took this note. Oh, here we are. How about this stat from the NC State game? Tech won by 14 points. Aline Horn... Naheem Aline, P.J. Horn, Wabisa Beattie, Hunter Couture, and Isaiah Wilkins. Those five players combined to go 3 of 21 from the field.
Yeah.
And Virginia Tech won by 14 points.
Yep.
And one of the things I wanted to talk about is those guys I just listed, Aline has scored over 20 twice, right?
Yeah, he's had a rough couple weeks ever since that 22-point game.
Yeah, P.J. Horn, we know, can put the ball in the bucket. Wabisa Beattie's not a scorer. He's a facilitator. Hunter Couture's had good shooting games. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Wilkins can shoot. One of the things I really like about this team, and one of the things I've started to think about lately, is it's that time of year where I'm starting to pay more attention to ACC basketball. And there are a lot of ACC schools out there that have injury problems. They don't have depth.
Well, the ACC is not good. Let's go ahead and say it. It's bad.
It is bad. Yeah. I was going to say you mispronounced it's bad. And it's actually very concerning to me because I looked something up the other day and put it up on the message boards. The ACC won the first 10 ACC Big Ten challenges. In the last 11, if I remember correctly, I know the Big Ten has won 6 of them. The ACC has won 3 and they've tied 2. The ACC's won 3 out of the last 11 ACC Big Ten challenges. All they could do last year when the ACC was so good was tie it. It was tied at 7.
Right.
And that's a year when the ACC had 3 number one seeds.
And honestly, that was Tech's fault. Tech lost to Penn State. Tech never should have lost to Penn State. I'll take personal responsibility for losing the ACC Big Ten.
It's our fault, guys. Virginia Tech had nothing to do with it this year because they didn't play it. As a matter of fact, they beat Michigan State when they had
right.
their
shot. Yeah.
So this, I don't know, man. I'm not the revenue disparity is starting to manifest itself in this conference. When the ACC first started expanding in the early 2000s, they were right up there. I think they were the number one conference.
Arguably got a better arena than anybody in the ACC.
Right.
Penn State.
So since then, you've seen the SEC and the Big Ten launch networks and just really learn how to leverage their advantages in terms of living alumni, larger schools,
sure,
all that stuff. And, you know, the revenue disparity, in my opinion, is really starting to take hold. You're seeing the SEC hire a lot of good basketball coaches and try to make a run at the ACC. The Big Ten has arguably, they've proven it on the court for 11 years now that they're better. Have they won as many championships? Probably not, but head-to-head, they're better.
The ACC knew how to game the RPI. Every ACC school except Virginia Tech knew how to game the RPI. So the ACC generally stayed ahead in like the RPI ratings and things like that. The Big Ten has, if they haven't passed the ACC, they've obviously closed the gap quite a bit.
Yeah,
maybe even the SEC has to a certain extent. I think the ACC's had some bad coaching hires too. Maybe this goes into the money thing. Maybe it doesn't. I thought Josh Pastor was a horrible hire for Georgia Tech at the time. I was there on Danny Manning. He turned out to be a bad hire.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much that has to do with money or not, without knowing those schools' budgets or anything off the top of my head. For whatever Georgia Tech paid Josh Pastner, Virginia Tech got Mike Young for $2 million. You got to think he would have said yes to Georgia Tech 4 years ago if they'd come to him instead of Josh Pastner. I mean, that was a terrible hire, in my opinion. It's disappointing, but at the same time, this is an ideal year for the ACC to be down from Virginia Tech's perspective because Virginia Tech's putting 6 freshmen on the court. I'm very interested to see the new net rankings when they come out today or this week or whatever.
36.
Are you serious?
36.
Okay, Tech was...
Virginia Tech is 36 in the net.
They were 49th last week, and they were the 4th highest ranked ACC team. They were one of only 4 teams in the top 50.
I think UVA's dropped down to the 60s or 70s.
Oh, they were in the 60s this past week. It wouldn't shock me.
And then
me
they
if,
lost a home game to they Syracuse. Lost,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, to a Syracuse team that's basically 500.
Right, well, they lost 2. They lost to Boston College and
Boston College on the road and
Syracuse, and they had beaten Syracuse 48-34 in the opening game of the season in the Carrier Dome earlier this year, which some of these results are kind of showing you don't know what's going to happen on a game to game basis. So keep this in mind. Like Virginia loses at home to Syracuse and they had beaten Syracuse by 14 on the road earlier this year. Boston College beats UVA and then they turn around and get bombed by Georgia Tech by 20.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be all over the place.
Yeah, like Tech might lose to Wake Forest tomorrow night.
Yeah, so Tech's next 5 games, or if you believe it's the next 5, if you look at them, you're like, oh, they could win that one. They could win all of them.
Sure,
they're not going to.
Right.
I don't want to see a 1-4, 0-5 disaster.
Right.
But yeah, anything can happen. So Wake Forest is not a good team.
They're not a good team, but they've beaten NC State. They've got capable players. They're not capably coached, but. You saw, like, even like when back in the bad days of Virginia Tech basketball, like Ricky Stokes, when they'd win, they'd go 4-12 in the Big East every year, they'd still rise up and beat UConn, right?
Also, I'm pound UConn one time by like 20 points.
By 20 or 25 points in Castle. And, you know, UConn obviously was a much, much better basketball team, but Tech hammered them. And they had a few games like that back then where they Villanova with Jay Wright. I mean, I remember them hammering Villanova one time in Castle. So that's just the way the sport is to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. We tell people to do that every year, and they still do it. So I don't know why I still bother
just,
to say it.
Just playing with house money at this point. You know, 12-4, 3-2. I didn't
36th. Tech would be in the NCAA tournament if it's.
If things broke properly, if enough of the small conference teams won their tournaments and things like that.
Yeah, but 36th, now we've only had 1 year of the net, so you can't really do a huge study of it and say, oh, who's the highest ranked net team to be left out of the field? But near as I can tell, man, the NCAA committee is, they're really using the net more than anything. Wow. Like, they don't necessarily look at strength of schedule anymore. It's there. It's a factor. But the net rankings, their strength of schedule is part of that. So you don't want to count it twice. Like the net also, I think, uses some, like, Ken Pomeroy, all these advanced metrics that all have strength of schedules factoring in. Yeah. So you don't want to have strength of schedule as its own big separate category when it's already factored in.
Don't get hung up on that.
No, yeah, strength of schedule, it doesn't matter who you play anymore. It matters who you beat.
Right. Yep, and that's the way it should be.
Like Virginia Tech was always penalized for playing Maryland Eastern Shore, but now that because Virginia Tech beat Michigan State, the committee will say, well, it doesn't matter that Tech played Maryland Eastern Shore because they showed they could beat Michigan State.
Well, and they divide these things up into four quadrants, and as long as you get down into Q3 and Q4 and you don't have any losses.
Yeah, now the one thing that Tech, ideally, you need to get another quadrant one win or two.
And that's so to bring the conversation back around, that's the problem with the ACC being so
Syracuse
bad.
And NC State are just going to be quadrant two most likely, Syracuse goes on a big run, since that's a road game. I think a quadrant one win on the road is against a top 75 team.
Right.
But a home quadrant one win, I think, is against a top 35 team, which NC State is not.
Yeah. So let's sum this up, and then we'll move on to questions from Facebook Live. Hopefully you guys have been putting stuff in. I'm actually here's where I am. Here's how far I've come. I'm looking at Mike Young, and I'm like, man, that guy's such a good coach. I wish they'd gotten him when he was younger.
Sure.
Like,
he made a comment sometime between now and when he was hired, and I don't know what year he was talking about, but he said, I don't know if I was ready for it then.
Yeah, and that's a good point. This is definitely the right time in his career. Mm-hmm. And
you imagine being, I think he took the job when he was 50, you're 55, right?
55, just turned 55.
So when he's, just imagine signing a piece of paper tomorrow and you just started making 10 times more money overnight.
Yeah.
Because that's what he did this past March. He signed a contract with Virginia Tech. At the age of 55, his salary increases by 10.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's insane.
I fully expect that to happen to me this year. But anyway, I really like where the program is. Next game is at Wake Forest, 9:00 Wednesday night,
and then Syracuse at home, which I really want to win
on Saturday.
Because, you know, 4 years in the Big East and Syracuse never played at Virginia Tech.
Now Syracuse, I watched that the end of that game against UVA. They were, you know, that was a rock fight, and then in overtime, Syracuse just went off.
They won straight 3-pointers.
They scored 20 points in overtime.
Ooh, good gracious!
Somebody put it on the message boards that Syracuse in the last four halves against UVA had scored basically 18 to 20 points. Then they scored 20 points at 5 minutes of overtime.
Yeah, that's
so. One more thing I want to get out there, because it just went through my mind. I did want to talk about this today, even though we're getting kind of late in the podcast. Again, I didn't get a chance to research this. Someone on the message board said, and the announcers said this on the game, the NC State game, Virginia Tech is number one in the country in fewest turnovers.
I looked it up on Ken Pomeroy yesterday or the day before. No, I think I looked it up after the NC State game. So it had taken the NC State game and factored it in. Tech was fourth in turnover efficient or turnover percentage in the country.
In sheer number of turnovers, they may be number
turnover one. Efficiency is turnovers per possession and stuff.
Right.
So yeah, because some teams have they play at a slower tempo. Right. Tech's not playing at a fast tempo. Tech's like 220th in tempo. Yeah. But you can't really tell it because Tech passes a lot.
Yeah.
But they are generally taking, you know, 20 seconds off the shot clock at least during a possession. So their tempo rating is low, but they're passing it a lot, which makes it an entertaining brand of basketball. It's impressive considering he asked them to move a lot and he asked them to pass the ball a lot.
Yeah.
And it's a bunch of freshmen that have never played together before. And there's a lot of moving parts, and yet they're still not turning the basketball over.
So how good of a coach is that
Correct.
Guy?
Right.
And, of course, he's got one of the best in the country in assist-to-turnover ratio with Wibisa
Beattie. With Beattie, yeah.
It starts with that, but the other guys are part of this, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Honestly, if they're fourth right now, they would be first. Like Nolly is one of those guys who he's either on or off.
I was going to say, so they're number one in the country of turnovers, and that's with Landers Nolly getting major minutes.
Exactly.
Because he does tend to
turn it over. He does turn it over a lot. He'll grow out of that eventually. He's just got to learn how to let the game. He's got to learn that there's other good players on the team, too. And I think he's figured that. I think he's done a better job of that the last two games. The beginning of the season, it kind of did seem like he needed to score 30 points every time he went out there. But now you're seeing Jalen Cohn, since he's playing the two guard, his natural position.
Right.
You see, he's growing into it. Couture hadn't had a great shooting night the last two games, but you know he's capable. He's capable of scoring double figures
anytime.
He's next,
man. He's going to pop some threes here soon.
You know Naheem Aline is capable because he's done it before. Isaiah Wilkins can get hot. So there's plenty of guys on this team. There's enough good players on this team where one or two of them could have an off night and they still win. And those are your best teams. When you're not relying on one player to score 25 points in a night, and that's why, honestly, I mean, that's why, obviously, it goes without saying that the more good players you have, the better. But the more scores you have, especially, means a couple of those guys can have off nights. I mean,
exactly what I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, you look at that lineup Tech put on the court last year. Anybody they put out there could score 20 points on any given night, just about.
That makes. The players can be inconsistent, but your results can be consistent because different guys are stepping forward different nights. So one last comment, and we don't really need to go into this, but one of the things I like about this team is that they look relaxed. They look like they're having fun. Mm-hmm. You know, Naheem Aline was 0 of 5. Wibisa Beattie passes up a layup, hits him out on the perimeter, and Beattie immediately holds up the three sign as he's running by Aline, and Aline pops the three.
Yeah.
And that was the dagger. That was the one that made it 66-52 and put the game out of reach.
Yeah, and the other thing I really like about this team is that they've got a couple of guys who they don't need to score to be effective. I'm really thinking of three guys. Couture, because of his floor burns. That dude's on the floor a lot.
And he slapped the ball out of hands three times.
Yeah, exactly.
No fouls.
Beattie doesn't have to score to be effective.
Yeah.
Because he's very, very good assist. He doesn't turn the ball over very much. Generally a pretty good defender outside of the UVA game. And Radford rebounds so well and plays defense so well that he didn't have to score to be a good player. So when he does score 18, that's an MVP performance.
Yeah.
Or it would be if Landers Nolly didn't exist.
Yeah. So good stuff. We will throw it over to Facebook Live now. Malcolm, we got much participation today.
Yeah, we've always got plenty of people. We'll start with Dale Kaiser. He asked this last week. We didn't get questions. So he says, with our Nike deal being close to ending, do you see us changing or making
is
Nike
close?
Actually give us better products or uniforms?
It's not as close as you think. I studied the heck out of this. I don't know. It's been 3 or 4 years ago now. And Virginia Tech's deal, the information I had at the time that was that the deal expired at the end of – in the middle of 2022, at the end of the 21-22 academic year. I got a piece of information after that it had been extended another year through 2023. So you're looking at three more years. I think one of the points, and I don't even want to get into that, because at the time I studied it years ago, it was the fifth worst deal in the country, and the four that were worst were all renewing
Rutgers.
Within a year or two.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's probably the worst now.
So it's the worst in the country, you know, and I don't, we could actually dedicate a whole show to that.
It's unfortunate that that never came up for renewal when Buzz was the basketball coach, because that's that's a brand to sell. You know, Buzz is a Nike guy. Just having Buzz Williams as basketball coach, a big name like that, that adds value in and of itself.
Yeah. So I think what Dale is getting at is he's probably saying that the uniforms have gotten kind of stale. And I agree with that. I don't see where the basketball uniforms have changed much at all in years.
Yeah, there's no – Clark Ruhlin needs to get on that.
Doing different
– Virginia Tech basketball uniform combination through the years. Come on, Clark. Oh,
holy cow.
I will say this. One of my favorite possessions is the first time Virginia Tech ever wore black jerseys for a basketball game was during the 2003-2004 season, the game at Pittsburgh. And Zabian Dowdell was a freshman that year. Him and Coleman and Jamon were all freshmen. I've got Zabian's jersey from that game.
No kidding.
From the 2003-2004 season.
Well, you need to bring that in. We need to hang it up.
Yeah, I guess I do, don't I?
We do need to shift some of the stuff on the set around. Anyway, Dale, I got no good news for you, man. You know, it's we're from the time I did the article to the expiration of the contract, we're only about halfway there. I remember thinking we got 6 years of this.
Virginia Tech's financial situation, you know, I guess probably being bottom half of the Power Five in terms of revenue, partially created by lack of vision on an ACC network, but partially Virginia Tech created as well.
Yeah.
For deals like the Nike contract.
Yeah, and that's the subject of a whole nother podcast. So what else you got, Malcolm? Are you on the couch, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, he is. All right, let's look at the couch.
Ryan Haynes asks, where do you think VT stands in a very muddled ACC? And that's talking about football.
Oh, football?
Football.
Yeah, he asked that way back when we were doing the Keen discussion.
I think let's talk Coastal. And we were talking about this on the boards the other day. I'm 99% sure you're going to see UNC pick to win the Coastal next year.
It'll be either be UNC or Tech. I think Tech is the third best program in the ACC, right? No, probably second best program. I think since Fuente got here, since all that round of coaching changes that year, Virginia Tech has the second best record in the ACC.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because we all remember that 2018 was rough.
Was bad, but that's how it is these days. If you're not one of the blue bloods, you don't have, there's not consistency behind those teams.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, there's not much parity in terms of talent anymore. They all go to those top four schools, the truly elite players for the most part. So it makes it tougher to be consistent after that, in my opinion. So I think Tech can get better. They're obviously trying to with these coaching changes. I mean, Fuente's not happy. I think he's happy without being content, which is, that's okay.
That guy's driven.
Yeah, he's very, very driven. So I think Tech and UNC right now would be the ones that are most poised.
Keep an eye on Georgia Tech because they're recruiting well.
Right.
You know, I think they got some good momentum in their program.
But you're still talking like another 2 years before I think they can really threaten.
But as far as the immediate future, the thing about UNC is they got the marquee quarterback, phenomenal quarterback. Mm-hmm. They've been recruiting really well, which the media that make these predictions, they're not really going to factor the recruiting in, particularly yet. But one thing that will factor in is they love them some Mack Brown. He's very media friendly.
Absolutely.
A lot of them worked with him. You know, when he wasn't coaching, he was in media. So he's going to get the benefit of the doubt. And another thing that this discussion triggers in me is somebody asked, is the spring game going to be televised next year? And my first answer was, you know who's our coach, right? And then I got to thinking about it. The ACC network exists now. Mm-hmm. And now, the ACC has not shown any particular ability to run this football conference properly. But one would think that part of the ACC network being around would be, okay, all 15 of UACC schools, well, not Notre Dame, all 14 of UACC football schools, your spring game will be televised this year, and we will run them on an endless loop for 3 weeks after they occur.
Well, see, my view on that is the direct opposite of everybody else's. I don't think the spring game should be televised for recruiting purposes.
Yeah, because you said
it's our biggest recruiting event of the year.
People will stay
home. Because we have one of the best fan bases in the country in terms of people showing up to a spring game.
Right.
And that's actually started to drop a little bit as the ACC, as the spring game got it started getting televised and things like that. I know if I lived in Virginia Beach, I wouldn't go to the spring game if it was on TV.
Yeah.
No, why?
Well, it could hurt attendance some, but then again, it's the ACC network, which not everybody gets.
That's true.
So,
yeah,
we'll take one. Malcolm, how many minutes in are we right now? A lot.
70.
Yikes! Okay, we got time for one more question.
One. Ooh, that's a lot of pressure.
Well, you know, we need, and I say this all the time, and maybe, and this will help me because then I don't have to prepare. Maybe Thursday we do another podcast and we just open it wide, like we've been saying we wanted to do.
Not a bad idea.
Here's a pretty open one. Derek Moss asks, breakout players in football next season, in your opinion?
Breakout players is interesting because there's so many returning starters that there's just not that many open spots for breakout player candidates.
Yeah.
My first thought goes to Tailback, where McLeese is leaving.
So you got Khalil Herbert coming in.
Yeah.
Taj Gary.
Right. You've got, obviously, Blackshear, who we just talked about, is a running back slash receiver.
Yeah.
You don't know exactly what his role is going to be yet. Holston coming back off a broken leg, although he's been hurt so much in his career, you don't hold out much hope, although I'd love to see it. But he's very keen-like in his preparation and things like that. My personal feeling is that Khalil Herbert is the guy most likely to break out, the Kansas transfer.
Let's see who. So I'm going to throw some candidates out there. One that doesn't quickly come to mind is Braxton Burmeister. What if Burmeister really is?
Clearly, if he's the starting quarterback, he'll have a breakout year, right?
I don't want to. We're at the end of the podcast, so we could drill down into that in some depth. I agree with the guys you mentioned. I don't really think that there are any breakout candidates in the wide receiver core.
Blackshear, if he plays wide receiver.
True.
We'd always heard Hazleton was probably going to leave, but he hasn't made an announcement yet. So the longer it goes on, the better that is. But if he leaves, then that's an open spot. So by default, there's a breakout player there. The other guy that comes to mind is Amari Barno, if he plays defensive end.
I was going
to
mention
we don't know what Tech's scheme is going to be. I know, let's just say the linebacker positions don't change at all. He can't continue to go the rest of his career as a third-string backer. He's too good of an athlete.
Do something with him.
Yeah. I would love to see him at defensive end. If they go back to the end stud scheme, whereas the end is a short-side defensive end and the stud is a wide-side defensive end, I would just love to see that guy at stud and have him give him all that space to run. So I think he's a possibility in the right spot, in the right position to be a breakout guy on the defensive side of the ball.
I agree with that. That's who I was going to mention. On the D-line, I don't know. I would love to see Jaden Cunningham break out.
And which one of those guys does he take playing time from if he does? Because those top four defensive tackles are pretty
exactly.
good. Well,
exactly. Yeah. A year or two after we were panicking about the defensive tackle position, I feel pretty good about it. But part of that is that, you know, they tacked on Kendricks and Pollard very late in the recruiting process, and both of those guys have been pretty good.
Well,
and
they were summer guys.
And
they were early targets.
Were they really?
Yeah.
Well, they were early targets. I wasn't really dialed into them, though. Right. They didn't commit till late.
Did they not?
I think they committed late. Okay. If anybody wants to correct me, a guy that I really was pleasantly surprised by was Deshaun Crawford, and he was voted best defensive lineman by his teammates. Mm-hmm. It's a shame he was dinged up like what seemed like the last half of the season.
Yeah,
but we're not talking about guys who are surprises that we liked. We're talking about breakouts. So we got Barno, somebody at the running back position.
Somebody's going to have to step up at safety. You could say Devin Hunter.
Well, I hope so.
I hope so.
I don't think you can really call Brock Hoffman a breakout player because, you know, the offensive line is a little bit more subtle, and I think everybody's expecting a lot out of him anyway.
Yeah, they are. for all I know, he's the best interior lineman since Wyatt Teller.
Yeah.
But we don't know that yet. Because
if he does something like win the Remington, okay, I'll call him the breakout player.
Yeah. Right, right.
But Tech doesn't get that kind of attention.
So. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Not these days, at least. But I don't know what I expect from him. It wouldn't shock me at all if he came out and was Virginia Tech's best center. In fact, I kind of do expect that.
Yes.
And I would think Hudson would move to guard.
Yep.
But other than that, you know, I don't know if he's dominant or not. I know he's a weight room warrior, and he's really, really, really strong. I don't want to put too much pressure on him, though, for a guy who's never played at this level.
Well, and he seems to be regarded by his teammates as
very, very highly. So, absolutely.
With Dalton Keene exiting stage left, that's a loss of some leadership. So yes. he can be a guy that can step up offensively. So appreciate the question. Good question. And, you know, thanks to everybody for listening and checking out the TSL podcast. And, oh, you know what? I've scheduled things in the morning. So if we do a podcast Thursday.
No, let's not do it Wednesday. Because we have a 9 o'clock game on Tuesday night.
I thought that was Wednesday night.
That's Tuesday.
Hmm. All right. Let me look that up while I'm talking. So if we do open one wide open on
I
Thursday.
I hope it's Tuesday because I wrote Tuesday. And
it will be later in the day. All right. So let's see. At Wake, Tuesday. I got the idea it was Wednesday. I'm thinking about the UNC game the following week. That is Wednesday. So cool. Tech plays tomorrow night. That's excellent. So if we open something up on Thursday, it'll be a little bit later in the day because I got a thing I got to do in the morning. Actually, I put something in the morning every morning this week. So, but look for that. I think we'll kind of make the decision to do that, and I think that'll be a lot of fun.
We'll throw it out there as just a Q&A the whole time.
That
sounds fun to me.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching and listening. We'll see you on the next Tech Sideline podcast.